Welcome back to Buzzardry. I'm Patrick McGee. I'm here with Jonathan Brent, Jacob Fitzgerald. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. What about you, Fitz?
Not too bad. Could be better, I guess, but overall not terrible.
Yeah, so it is March 11th at 5:40 p.m., so right before the Sun Belt Basketball Championship, actually. But yeah, I guess we're going to go over basketball, kind of look at what basketball looks like next year. And then baseball, and then take a couple questions. But I guess starting off with basketball, USM men's basketball goes 1-and-done at the Pensacola Bay Center, losing 75-59 there. And yeah, I mean, it was just a game that USM was never really in, only had maybe a couple brief leads early on, and just was not nearly good offensively, kind of the story of the season. But yeah, USM finishes 16-16 overall. 9-9 in the Sun Belt, sixth place finish in the regular season. Obviously, that didn't change with the tournament result. But I guess just general thoughts on that game and then the season at large.
Yeah, remember that time we were talking about going live on Monday night and hypothesizing over which 2 seed we're going to play? That was fun. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's tough this year in that you watch 30 games of regular season and have arguably our biggest win in a decade over the ranked JMU and all the cool things. Good win against UAB, seeing this team battle with injury after injury and hardship with Coach Ladner and everything. It wasn't a complete dud, but in college basketball and mid-major conferences like this, all that really matters for postseason impact and splash and money generation is a tournament berth, and it's tough to see it a back-to-back season with experienced rosters. Like, these guys have played a lot of college basketball and could not have looked more inexperienced or uncomfortable with the moment in Pensacola. So that's tough.
Yeah, you said it. I mean, I think there were so many reasons why you expected to see, just a lot of fire out of that team during this game. You know, you get Ladner back, and I know he's not in his full capacity, but there he is, you know, after weeks of being out due to what it sounds like is a near-death experience, right? There were so many things that you expected to fire the team up, and I honestly expected so much more than what we saw. But, yeah, bummer way to end the season, and that, you know, that's been the story two years in a row. So kind of disappointed in the way that ended up.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at the preseason. I mean, USM was picked, I think, third preseason. I think the computers had them around the same place. You just couldn't really get in. I mean, you, again, could not get any consistency throughout the season where you would have a three-game stretch where you played pretty well, but then you would immediately, you know, turn around and play, you know, a really bad game. I mean, there were several instances of that throughout the year. But, I mean, you know, kind of getting what Brent says, I mean, the whole thing with one bid league basketball, he was playing – your best basketball in the conference tournament. I mean, you look at App State, you know, they had a tremendous season, you know, winning the regular season, beating Auburn, and, you know, they barely escaped in their first game against Georgia Southern. They lost yesterday to Arkansas State. And that's, again, that's what it comes down to is what happens in the tournament. And, you know, even you looking at the Doc experience, I mean, even his last two teams were able to get to that semifinal round and, you know, give a little bit of hope heading into that or in the conference tournament. And you just really haven't been able to do that. I mean, since, you know, Ladner's tenure, you won one conference tournament game. That was a game against UTSA, I think, in 2022, which was, basically, I think, like a play-in game because those were maybe the last two teams in the bracket that year. And, yeah, it was just not nearly a good enough offensively. I mean, if you kind of look at the Sun Belt Conference only statistics, according to KenPom, you were 12th in offensive efficiency, but 5th in defensive efficiency. So you played a pretty good year defensively, but you just never had enough on offense. And, you know, I think losing Hase and then Pinckney to maybe a little bit lesser degree, I mean, those were big losses, especially, you know, and then obviously Ivory within the season, it really took away your ability to shoot the three late. And, you know, Curbelo is a guy that can play kind of hot and cold, but he's not going to be a huge offensive threat, more of a distributor. And I think that all of those, you know, factors kind of sunk the season, if you will. So,
yeah, I mean, I can't really think of a thing we did well in that game. You make half your free throws, you get out rebounded, and you get killed in transition. miss a lot of makeable shots. It's just, I mean, it's tough to win a game or even be close to winning a game when all those cylinders are clicking in that direction. But, yeah, and like I alluded to earlier, pretty old roster, and we'll get into the construction for next year. But it's a tough way to go out.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess getting into next year's team, I mean, is going to be, I mean, you would think pretty much, I mean, not a completely new team. There's a few pieces. I mean, you would expect that, I guess they're acting like Curbelo has a chance to come back, even though, you know, I guess he's listed as senior on the KenPom site, but he does have, I think, a year left of eligibility. You'll get Alvarez will come back. You'll get, Izzy and Hall back. But, I mean, and you'll get Montgomery back. But, I mean, it's going to be a kind of a new-look team. And, I mean, I think you're just getting back to that point about offensively. You got to get a lot better offensively. And I think you almost have a redundancy with on-ball guards, with Curbelo and Alvarez. Both of those guys, not necessarily great scorers, but they can really distribute. So you need to find some off-ball guards in the portal, or maybe like a late guy from JUCO. And then, a small forward, some guy that can be like a 6'6", 6'7", guy that can shoot the three a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what kind of role Kobe Montgomery plays. I mean, he kind of was phased out toward, the later part of the season. But he was a guy that shot three pretty well. I mean, 36% on the year from three. And then I think you got to try to upgrade it at rim protector. I mean, you look at, Izzy was a guy that he had a couple of moments of improvement throughout the year. But I think most people would agree you got to get better there. I mean, you're going to get Lee Biad, who's another 7-foot guy. He'll be off his ACL injury, but I think you got to somehow get a lot better offensively through the portal, and especially through those forward. I mean, really, everything except on-ball guards, I think, is where you really need to upgrade. So,
yeah, you said it. Need some size, need some 3-and-D guys, and whether that's portal, JUCO, or you'd hope you wouldn't be over relying on the high school in today's college athletics, given where we are and who we are. But should be interesting to see the way they've constructed it. I mean, it took. Last year's team was a complete 180, and it was a hit. And this year's team was kind of building off of that 180, and it was somewhere between the first 2 years or 3 years of the Ladner era and last year. And you hope you can trend upward, but it's going to be a lot of turnover.
Yeah, but I mean, we saw it from 2022 to 2023, and then a better example, I guess, for this year would be Arkansas State, who's about to play in the Sun Belt Championship here. They were dead last in the league. Or 13th or 14th, and they've completely turned around, adding transfers from like Tarleton State and Arkansas, New Mexico. So with the portal now, I mean, you can do a complete 180. And it's impossible really to speculate about next year's team just because you have no idea what it's going to look like. But I mean, you do have those couple pieces with Curbelo, Alvarez. But again, those guys haven't proved they can play a full season. So we talk about Montgomery and guys like Izzy, get Libiat back, but. Yeah, I mean, you want to, try to get back in that top four mix next season just because you don't want the men's basketball to go into a malaise kind of where it was, in that post-Tyndall to, really up until last year where, people were kind of checked out and not a lot of interest in the program. I think last year did a lot to bring people back in. I don't think this year necessarily, pushed people away because it was still, a sixth place finish where there were sometimes throughout the year where it looked like, that South Dakota State game and that first game in league play against Georgia Southern where it looked like you were looking toward another, bottom two or three finish. You were at least able to finish middle of the pack, but you got to kind of, take another step forward and kind of reinvent yourself some way to get people back on board, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. It's crazy what the portal and NIL that this era has done to college athletics. And obviously, the it's still a mafia, right? The rich stay rich and get richer, but it gives the lower level tier schools the ability to be 100% hit or 100% miss, depending on how guys gel from a million different directions into a new roster each year. And I hope we come out on the receiving end.
Yeah, I mean, you got to hope that the some of the players that you're waiting on can kind of live up to their expectations. And other than that, I think if you don't pick up a few key pieces, then we're just going to fall flat. But, yeah, I'm inspired by what you see from Arkansas State and the way that they've been able to turn around in a short time. And, all that means is it can be done. And, hopefully we can follow a similar path.
Yeah, and I don't think there will be. I guess people wondering if there will be like a CBI or CIT type deal. And I think there might even be like a tournament in Mexico. I don't think that would be the case, just given, you know, Leidner's health scare and, you know, the team is 100% healthy. So I'm pretty sure that'll be it. And, hopefully, you know, get some portal news over the next month, and we'll keep people covered on that and you know, kind of try to contextualize that. But I guess moving into baseball, so we recorded on Wednesday night. USM has a good weekend in Ruston, wins 2 out of 3. Offense comes alive a little bit. Pitching kind of falls apart, or not kind of falls. I mean, definitely falls apart there on Sunday with, I think, 19 free passes between 14 walks and 5 hit batters. But, I mean, overall, a good weekend. It was good to see the offense getting going again. But, you know, I guess a couple, you know, pitching concerns is, you know, maybe that bullpen doesn't have quite the depth we thought it did a week or so ago or before the season. But I guess what was y'all's initial take on the weekend in Ruston?
Yeah, you're very, very fortunate to get 2 out of 3 on the road there. Was definitely, like you said, inspired by the offense. I will say, I just pulled up the box score for Friday, and I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a box score look like this in my life. 1 through 4 in the lineup, you go 3 for 5, 2 for 5, 3 for 5, 3 for 5. 5 through 9 in the lineup, go 1 for 21. I knew it was pretty top heavy and loaded towards that way from watching the game. But the first time I looked at the box score, wow. And I mean, that caused some shuffle that you saw on Saturday. And it was funny, the guys, you mix it up on Saturday with Gillespie at first for the first time and yanking Keyes' presumed shirt to start. And then the guys that replaced him, Russo, came in with a big RBI single and Odom with a run clearing triple that I assume hit the third baseman's glove because it looked pretty foul from where we were sitting, Pat. But still, other than those pinch hit, Ozzie had a nice game, but everybody else, we got 1 hit from the bottom of the order other than that. So it's still kind of top heavy, still would like to see it get more complete, but yeah, that's not trying to complain about 9 runs, 11 runs, and 11 runs on the weekend. That's what we've been asking for from this offense. But I can get to the pitching later, but Fitz, do you have any comments on the offense?
Yeah, it's funny because I saw the same things looking at the box score. I mean, you know, I've said it quite a bit since baseball season started that you've got to get more out of the middle part of the lineup. And, you know, the middle of the lineup went 3 for 12, 2 for 11, and 5 for 13 on the weekend. So it's like, love the production that you got out of the first four, right? But if you're not following that up with, and especially guys like Carson Pato, who have been here, you know, 100 years and have a ton of experience, you know, you gotta expect a little bit of consistency. And I know it seems like I pick on a single player every week, and I promise I'm not. I'm referring to the meaty part of the lineup. But yeah, I mean, and I hate to sound like I'm you know, throwing a weight blanket on a great weekend, but you know, there's still some question marks in that lineup. But thrilled with the 2 wins out of 3 against, you know, I assume is a good La Tech team. I mean, they went in to the weekend 12-1, so that's not easy to do, even, you know, no matter who you're playing. So that's an exciting piece.
Yeah, that's a really old lineup too. I mean, if you look at their roster, they look like our basketball lineup with nothing but seniors. I think Sunday, 8 of their 9 hitters were seniors. They play in a wiffle ball park, but Lane Burroughs teams can always hit the ball. So being able to get what you got out of Nico and Billy Friday and Saturday, as well as Colby Allen, he was great Friday or Saturday, sorry. But I think both those guys would probably tell you they didn't have their best stuff. And I know Saturday, the zone, the strike zone from the home plate umpire was all over the place, but getting 5 innings and 1 run out of Nico and 6 and 2 earned out of Billy. That's what won you the series, along with enough offense to win it. And then Sunday was just not the case.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess just kind of looking at the lineup first, I mean, I think you're starting to develop some, I guess, or just the – not the – I guess we'll see if the offense production holds up in a consistent manner, but I guess just the actual composition of the lineup, I think you found a lineup that works with – I mean, McIntyre at leadoff, again, that didn't, you know, thrill me just because he didn't have a lot of power. But, you know, we saw him hit that home run, opposite field home run, which was definitely – didn't think you were going to see that. And then, you know, he has a 921 OPS, which is, I guess, second of guys that qualify. I guess third overall. Butler is just under the qualifying, I guess, because he has 33 at bats. But I think that Gillespie at first, I think you're going to see that stick at least temporarily. Although Russo, again, you know, had that nice pinch hit, opposite field hit on Saturday. I think Butler has definitely solidified himself there in the lineup. So I think you're going to see a little less shuffling in the lineup. And I think the question is now, okay, well, was this just one good weekend at a smaller park? And or is this, you know, a sign of, you know, okay, maybe the things are turning for this offense? And I think, you know, you kind of look at this upcoming weekend, we play Alabama Tuesday, which will be a very difficult game, you know, just in terms of sure that, or we'll get into them, but that, you know, that's a top 15 opponent, even though, you know, you're going to be seeing midweek pitching. But then I think you can look at that Marshall series, and I think that's the series where you really want to get the bats going. I mean, that'll be a team that's, it's probably gonna be a long shot for them to make the conference tournament. You want to be able to be better offensively at home. I mean, you've kind of looked at this team, you know, you score 31 runs over the weekend at Louisiana Tech. Then you scored, you know, whatever it was, 15 runs or double-digit runs at UNO. But then, you know, you can only score, I guess it was, you know, fewer than – or I think about 20 runs was it against – or fewer than 20 runs against Marist.
Yeah,
and then, you know, that's not even mentioning Indiana State, Missouri State. So you got to find a way to be more – I mean, you know, nothing groundbreaking here, but better on a consistent basis offensively. You know, we'll see if you can replicate what you did at a smaller park at a, you know, a more it's neutral run environment park like Pete Taylor Park. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely an encouraging weekend, and you know, you saw some power from guys you didn't necessarily expect to see power from, like Ozzie Pratt and Dalton McIntyre. Encouraging weekend for the offense. But I guess, yeah, I mean, getting into the pitching, I mean, Mazza's still looking like an ace, 1.93 ERA. 0.94 whip through three starts. Good start for Oldham. You know, we kind of talked about he struggled a little bit, I guess, with the walks in the first three outings. But, you know, in this game, he was a lot sick, only walked one in six innings. But, yeah, I mean, Sunday was, you know, concerning to say the least. So, I mean, Armistead starts, and he didn't, you know, get a lot of help from his defense. You know, up 5-1. He had a double play ball that could have got him out of it, but it's booted it. There and you know that kind of really got a lot of Tech back in the game and you know built them some momentum up. But I mean, he goes three innings, gives up four runs, two of those earned, but he, you know, four hits. He allows eight base runners through three innings. But then I guess you get to the bullpen, and that was the question I think a lot of people had, were not only the bullpen, where you know really nobody pitched all that well coming out of the bullpen yesterday, but a lot of the bullpen decisions. I mean, you started going to guys in a game that, you know, where you have a chance to sweep a Q1 opponent and you kind of treat it like it's a, you know, a midweek game against the Southland team. Because you got J.W. Armistead, which is his first appearance as a Golden Eagle. You had Ben Riley Flowers, who was struggled early on. Then you got Landon Payne, who came in with a lot of promise, but has struggled. Drake Meeks came in for his first appearance. Chase Adams, who, you know, people wanted earlier. He came in and got an out. But then I guess people were kind of claiming from Middleton and Adams earlier, and you know, you ended up throwing 12 different guys, including I guess three different guys that made their USM debut. But I guess just general thoughts on I guess that last day of pitching and some of the pitching decisions and what it means for the bullpen and the rotation going forward.
I don't know if the idea there was to save as much as we can for I don't even want to put it into words that we're saving arms for midweek, but whatever the experiment was on Sunday, hopefully we never see that again. not that I'm saying that, you know, J.W. Armistead and Landon Payne and some of those other guys don't have bright futures at Southern Miss, but I don't know what the weirdness was going on and kind of how we ended up where we did on Sunday. But it was weird to say the least. It was the weirdest feeling I've had watching Southern Miss baseball, I think, ever.
Yeah, Oz called it one of his worst pitching showings in his career, and that sounds like a hyperbolic statement on the surface, but it's not. I don't know how to word that more bluntly. I mean, 19 free passes, seven guys came out and didn't even record two outs. If you would have told me that happened seven times this season, I probably wouldn't have believed you. I mean, guys are going out there not even throwing pitches in the zip code or the strike zone. Like, it. And yeah, I just scrolled through the schedule, and there's a greater than, I'd say, 70% chance that's the best road game on your schedule this year. And that we talk about road games help your RPI more than home games this year with that new formula. And it was extremely tough to watch. I, again, hope it's an anomaly. I think it is. Hope it's a good learning experiment and Oz learned what he needed to and can better formulate his bullpen moves and his Sunday afternoons going forward. You've seen early this year where he likes the Maza Sivley now that Cross is coming out of the pen on Friday, and Billy and Colby Allen has been a common piggyback on Saturday, and there's no question about it. Sundays are questionable or question marks still on how you piece this together. And I think every midweek we have the rest of the year's on a Tuesday. So talking about 48 hours rest, 2 days rest going into that midweek game from Sunday now. And I'm curious to see how he handles it going forward. I will say, I think that if Pratt handles that double play ball, and I guess it was the third, we keep it 5-1, none of those runs score, keep a 4-1 lead going into the fourth. I think you may have a different result, but you can't blame 19 free passes and 18 runs on one defensive play. But I don't think I've seen a Southern Miss pitching performance like that in my lifetime, and hope we can be better for it.
Maybe not in the Austrian era. I've seen a couple that were there. Was a game at there was a game at Rice in 2010. USM lost that 21-14, and went. I think Anthony Rendon hit a couple home runs that day, as did B.A. Volmuth. But that was a tough game to watch.
We threw 236 pitches. I just saw that stat.
230. LaTeX sent 60 guys to the plate in that game. So,
and here's my favorite stat from that game. They scored 18, but they also left 18 on base. So that easily could have been a 25 run performance.
Yeah. Effect,
but that's averaging more than two runners left on per inning.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm glad I can laugh about it now, but yeah, I hope that it's a wake up call for some guys. And, I guess a alert to Oz on how to piece that together going forward.
And before we move on, shout out to Dalton McIntyre. I mean, he had 9 hits on the weekend, and then I know Slade must be a loyal listener to the podcast. He had 6 hits, so shout out to him. So, like I said earlier, some exciting pieces coming from the offense that give me a little bit of hope moving into conference.
Yeah, and Billy Butler's home run, I think, was the hardest home run I've seen hit in a few years. That ball hit the top, not the light pole, it hit the light in left field at the Love Shack. Probably would have hit halfway up the dorm. I think Trackman gave it, said like 4:30 something. I wouldn't believe any number that started with a 4. It was obliterated. And that was his second of the game.
Yeah, and I guess just closing the book on baseball for or this weekend, I guess the question, we got a question about it, but getting back to that Sunday pitching is, do you make a change in that Sunday role? You know, you look at Armistead, 6.60 ERA, but a 1.27 whip. So I guess, his ERA isn't great, but his whip's still pretty good. But and he has, 4 walks, but 26 Ks over 15 innings, which is a really good K over 9. But I guess the thing you kind of look at him is, and his defense hasn't really helped him at times, last week and this week, but he does have that kind of unorthodox delivery that you don't really see a lot from starters. And, that can make him susceptible to left-handers because he has that kind of, I guess you would say, like a half sidearm delivery. He has a pretty good slider as well, but that's, not necessarily going to, really help him against left-handers. So, it's going to be a question of we'll see what they do this upcoming week with him versus Allen. I mean, Allen has actually thrown more innings than Armistead, 2 ERA, 0.89 whip. I would guess they'll give Armistead one more chance just because it wasn't necessarily his fault. It was not mostly his fault because, the bullpen gave up a ton of runs, but they were able to, chip away there in the third and fourth and take the lead. And he struggled with control at times. But I guess it will be interesting to see what Armistead and Allen, how that shakes out.
Yeah, I don't know if you pull him just yet, but I think if you do see him struggling early on, that you're hopefully a little more strategic on who comes out of the pen after that.
Yeah, and I think with Armistead, he's got a lot of east to west movement, both in his delivery and his pitches, and that he may be more susceptible to control issues. I think he led the team in HPPs last year and 3 walks this Sunday. So You'd like to see him in the zone a little more, but I guess that's kind of what you get when you get a guy with that kind of arsenal, with that much movement. But yeah, you hope he can hone in a little more and get a little more help from his defense, and a little early run support wouldn't help either. But he, I guess he got that a little bit on Sunday with the grand slam. But yeah, I don't, I think you give him one more. Hopefully he can have a better outing against Marshall at home and kind of kick off conference play on a high note.
Yeah, and I guess just, or one more thing on the bullpen. I guess, you know, kind of the rotation, you look at the bullpen, I think Middleton has definitely emerged as the closer. I think you look at other guys that you feel like you can trust. Sively, Allen, if he stays in the bullpen. And then I guess you would throw Chase Adams in there as well. So you kind of have three to four. And then, you know, maybe McCarty English, although his, you know, he's up close to a six ERA. His last couple outings haven't been great, although they haven't been terrible. So you have three to four guys you trust in that bullpen right now. But you need to be able to find to get either English or Payne going. You know, English has looked, you know, somewhat electric at times. Payne was a guy that, you know, we talked about maybe being the next Landon Harbor. Right now, he has almost a 16 ERA and a over three whip. So you got to get one of those type guys going. If you really want to have, you know, close to that depth that was talked about, before the season, but I do think you're in good hands there, on Friday and Saturday. In the rotation. So, okay. So getting in, I guess, to this upcoming week of baseball, Alabama Tuesday. Alabama is top 15 in the country. They've only lost one game. It was an extra inning game to DBU on the Sunday of the Frisco Classic. But I mean, you look at their numbers, they look like a pretty complete team. 1056 OPS as a team. ERA of 3.31, whip of 1.13. And the guy that they have announced that they're going to start is a freshman left-hander by the name of Zane Adams. He's a guy, 2.19 ERA, 1.54 whip, which means, you know, guys have actually been able to, he's been allowing some base runners, been able to work out of some jams, but, you know, he's only struck out 7 and 12 in a third innings, walked 5, so hasn't got a ton of swing and miss, but he was a guy that, you know, was, you know, seen as a draft threat. I mean, he's a low 90s, you know, maybe even mid 90s at times, lefty. And, you know, he got a lot of attention from MLB teams, ended up going to Bama. But I mean, you look at their offense. I mean, it's an old and powerful offense. I mean, you look at TJ McCants, who, you know, people remember from Ole Miss. He's there at Bama now as a grad transfer, or maybe not a grad transfer, but a transfer in some form or fashion. But he's at 1239 OPS. Gage Miller, who's a JUCO, you know, your classic JUCO masher. I think Bishop State Community College has a 1452 OPS. Evan Slate, who's a grad transfer, 1005 OPS. Bryce Eblen, 1159 OPS. Justin Lebron, who's a young guy. I think he's a true freshman, 1162 OPS. So they have, you know, four guys, or really five guys in their lineup with an OPS over 1,000. Will Hodo, who's a South Mississippi guy from Wayne Academy, plays their base from 958 OPS. So, yeah, I mean, it's a team that, I mean, they were a regional host last year, won that regional, branded to a Buzzsaw Wake Forest. And, you know, they lost their coach and their, you know, their best hitter and their best pitcher to the portal. But I think they're better than they were a year ago. And, I mean, they're a team that I could easily see making a run into June. So, yeah. Old explosive offense, a talented midweek starter, and, you know, it'll be a real challenge Tuesday. But, you know, certainly a winnable game in the midweek and a big RPI game in the midweek.
Yeah, you said it. This offense, first time I knew they were hitting home runs, just looking at scores and knowing they were 15-1. But my word, 13 home runs, driven 145 in, averaging 1040 as a team OPS. Or 1050. That's it's no joke. So offense is gonna have to come ready, and the pitching staff is gonna have a great opportunity to hopefully redeem themselves after Sunday. I gotta come ready to play for sure. It's always fun hosting an SEC school at the Pete. And yeah, hope we come ready to play.
Yeah, all I was gonna say is it's good to have this game at home. That's exciting for the team and the fan base, and hopefully we show up.
Yeah, it should be an electric atmosphere. I don't know if they'll announce a 6,000 plus like Ole Miss a couple years ago, but anytime you get an SEC team in a town, it is an electric atmosphere for sure. So, Yeah. So, and then getting into Marshall. So, opening league play here, and Marshall 6-9, and just kind of reviewing what they've done on weekends in non-conference. Got swept at College of Charleston in a four-game series. Went 1-3 at that Port Charlotte tournament with Michigan State and Indiana State. Won 2 out of 3 against Manhattan, and then 2 out of 3 against Southeastern Missouri. But the rotation that I believe they are going to roll out there is going to be Drew Harlow, Bryce Blevins, and then Carter Lyles. And Harlow's a guy, a right-hander, kind of a high 80s, low 90s guy. I mean, there's not a whole lot of, you know, Marshall's one of those programs where, I mean, there's not a whole lot of information on them just because there's not a whole lot of, like, fall reports and just because, you know, haven't been good for a long time. But and then the Saturday guy, Bryce Blevins, who's a guy that started the year in the bullpen pretty well there. And now has gotten a weekend role, but he has good numbers, 1.71 ERA, 1.33 whip. I don't know if I said the numbers for Harlow, 5.16 ERA, 1.24 whip. And then you get into Carter Lyles rounding out on Sunday, 4.38 ERA, 1.62 whip. And, you know, 5.04 ERA as a team, 1.57 whip. Team has 97 strikeouts and 130 innings, so not a whole lot of swing and miss stuff. 69 walks over 130. In the third innings. Offensively, you look at they are hitting 708 as a team with OPS, 13 home runs. Owen Ayers is a guy, 5 home runs, 288 on the year, 975 OPS. They brought in a transfer from Akron that hit 17 home runs last year. Has not been good so far, but Jack Firestone, who just has 1 home run on the year, 192 average. Kalen Smith leads them in hitting, 356 on the year, 2 home runs. But I guess just generally, I mean, yeah, again, not a whole lot of information on Marshall, but you kind of look at Massey, they're dead last in Massey, and the Sun Belt by a decent margin. It would be, you know, probably pretty unlikely that they're going to make the conference tournament. And I think you just kind of look at the series and a couple other series in the league, and, you know, you lost to Marist, which is, you know, kind of a, you know, or, you know, I don't know if you'd say it's an unforgivable loss, but it's a really, really ugly loss. And I think you can look at Marshall and a couple other teams as, you know, teams you really want to be able to sweep to avoid those RPI hits. And, you know, playing the team that's probably going to be sub 200 RPI at the end of the year. And I think this is kind of, you know, with losing to Marist, I think you see this as a must sweep weekend. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I was about to say that last sentence if you didn't. I think it's a must sweep weekend, both offensively and at the play or and pitching. It looks like we've got their number in most statistics, knock on wood. And I like how this conference schedule sets up, similar to the non-conference, and that you go Marshall, Georgia Southern, Troy, just like you went kind of Marist, Missouri State, Indiana State, and Tech. Like, you kind of step up as far as the metrics go, it looks like. So this is your first week at conference, like your Marist was your first week in non-conference. And like you said, not a lot of swing and miss stuff, just a little more than a half a strikeout per inning. And you hope guys can put the ball in play and generate a lot of runs and hopefully give a cushion for this pitching staff to gain some more confidence and give some other guys some opportunities this weekend. But I agree. It's greedy to ask for a must sweep in any weekend, but you're asking for it this weekend for sure. This is an RPI landmine waiting to happen.
Yeah, I feel like the whole time you guys are talking, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say. And the only thing I was really going to say was that, you know, if we don't sweep this weekend, it'll be pretty disappointing. And I know saying that is asking a lot, because sweeping any team is difficult. I get that, especially, you know, the landscape of the sport we're playing now. But, you know, I think it's necessary at this point in the season and the way things have gone that's what happens. So that's what I'm expecting. That's what I'm hoping, and looking for another big weekend offensively, and that will shore up all 3 days of pitching and put a stamp on it. So,
yeah, it'd be big to start 3-0 in the conference as well.
Okay, so looking at Sun Belt Week 4 last weekend of the non-conference, so South Al lost 2 out of 3 to Nebraska, won that first game, and then Nebraska scored 4 in the 5th, 6 in the 6th to win that 12-7. So not a bad series loss, but that would have been a nice one for South to have. Georgia Southern, so up Radford. Georgia State lost 2 out of 3 to Army at home. And then I guess, you know, the big series win for the league this weekend was Troy went on the road and took 2 out of 3 from Indiana. Indiana, one of the better teams in the Big Ten. So it was impressive to see Troy. And they've scored a ton of runs. And, you know, they scored 22 in the split doubleheader yesterday to win that. weekend. But yeah, nice weekend for Troy. 2 out of 3. App and Winthrop split 2. They did not play the third game. ULM swept Alabama A&M. Nice to see our friend Ben Milam getting a little bit viral on ULM. Hitting the home run cycle. They hit a solo, a two run, a three run, and a grand slam. I think they had another, maybe a solo or two run home
all
run.
All in the same inning.
All in the same inning. Yes. Yeah, that's an important part of it. So yeah, Alabama A&M, maybe the worst team in Division I, but ULM does sweep them, take care of business there. In Monroe, Texas State swept at home by Sam Houston. That's a tough look because Texas State had a good weekend last weekend. Beating Houston and Texas, but swept at home by Sam Houston, which is not a bad program. That's a solid program, but you know, worst case scenario, you only want to lose, or you want to be able to at least take one. They don't get one, so now they are 7-8 in the league. Coastal swept Michigan. They're still scoring a ton of runs there. I think last I checked, Coastal is #1 in Massey's offensive metric. ODU loses 2 out of 3 Northeastern, which was a top 25 preseason team. So not a bad series loss, but it would have been a nice series win for the conference if they could have pulled that off. We talk about Marshall, 1-2 out of 3 against SEMO. ULL, pretty fun series there. Easily could have been swept, honestly, but they were able to win that on Saturday and Sunday. And yesterday, they win 4-3 on a three-run, two-strike, two-out home run by their great shortstop, Cal DeBarge. He's going to go high in the draft. So ULL was able to win that. And then that Louisiana in-state series, 2 out of 3. JMU won 2 out of 3 against East Tennessee. And then Arkansas State won 2 out of 3 against Eastern Illinois. So what was y'all's guys' takeaway from that opening week – or the last week in a non-conference with Sun Belt?
Yeah, UL salvaged what was a weekend to a – from I would consider it went from a bad weekend to a weekend with that UL salvage on Sunday. But you would have liked that Northeastern win for Old Dominion. You would have liked – a little more out of a couple more wins out of the Big Ten series up north with South and Troy.
Well, Troy was at least able to take the series, though.
Yes, good series win for Troy, but 4 out of 6. I believe one of those six games we had the Sun Belt team had a pretty big lead in and kind of blew it. I think it was maybe Troy's loss, and a really really bad sweep for Texas State against Sam Houston. I think they've lost 5 in a row since that crazy game against LSU or Texas. My bad. But I hope they can turn around and hope we can get 3 or 4 bid league.
Yeah. Shout out to Troy and Coastal. I didn't realize that Michigan was kind of on skid so bad. I don't know really what happened there. I don't follow them too closely, but, that's always good to get those wins, series wins against the Big Ten. And I saw some people getting ruffled on Twitter about the Sun Belt surpassing the Big Ten as a baseball league, which I feel like has been the case for a lot longer than just this past weekend. But anyways, yeah, some good and some not so good from the league, but excited to put the non-conference behind us and get into conference play.
Yeah, and that's a good point on the Sun Belt Big Ten thing, because last year, I mean, that's kind of, I guess the Sun Belt Big Ten, that's kind of been the argument, who's the fifth best conference, is it the Sun Belt or the Big Ten, or maybe the Big West some years. But you know, last year the Sun Belt didn't do all that great against the Big Ten. I mean, you look at, I think South lost a series to Nebraska last year. USM, who second place team in the Sun Belt, lost a home series to Illinois last year, who's a middle of the pack Big Ten team. So the fact that you have Troy beating one of the better Big Ten teams in Indiana on the road, Coastal sweeping Michigan without much of a problem, and then South at least was able to get that one game against Nebraska. So you go 6-3 over the weekend against the Big Ten. I think that is a positive result for the Sun Belt in that kind of battle of who is the fifth best conference. And the Big Ten, they'll be adding several pretty good baseball programs next year. But at least this year, hopefully the Sun Belt can stay in that top five for college baseball RPI.
Yeah, both Boyd's World and Warren Nolan have the Sun Belt, and I guess they're ELO, not RPI, but #5 in both of those. So at least looks like we're off to a good start there, and hope we can, I guess, from this point on, you just try to win the really good midweeks, right? Because every weekend you're playing against each other. But yeah, good start. I think we may have flirted with top 4 for a couple seconds there last year. So maybe we can do that and catch the Pac-12. That'd be nice.
Yeah, and that conference RPI usually stabilizes a little bit before like individual team RPI, so that may have some staying power there. Yeah, so looking ahead at this opening weekend of conference play, JMU goes to Coastal, Georgia Southern goes to ODU, ULL goes to Arkansas State, App goes to Texas State, Troy goes to ULM, and Georgia State goes to South Alabama. So not any huge series, I guess, in the league. Maybe you look at Georgia Southern, ODU having some interest there, but no real headliners this week, I'd say.
Yeah, kind of a soft opening, it sounds like. But, yeah, we'll get into some questions. I guess mini tradition, we'll start with Kyle from Midtown. He sent a few into us. First question, how concerning is our third day of series pitching?
Yeah, I think we kind of talked about it, and it's very concerning. I mean, you have to be able to find you have to get some consistency from your starting, or you know, either it's Armistead or Allen. They need to be able to, you know, I don't think you look at, you know, it the same way as you do a Friday starter where you want them to go six or seven, maybe eight innings. I think you need to, you know, if you can get five from your Sunday guy each week, I think you would see that as solid. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting to see how they're kind of using the cadence, like Brent was mentioning earlier, with, you know, Sibley's kind of paired up with Mazza, and then Allen paired up with Oldham. They're going to have to find some sort of combination that works on Sunday. And, you know, you really have not had it the last two weekends. So,
yep. Next question is, how concerning was Seth Smith and Tuna's performance on this weekend? And I think we alluded to it by maybe expanding a little bit, just talking about the bottom of the order as a whole. But yeah, I think that definitely Friday night, everybody below the four spot was abysmal. And then you saw some, Davis had a couple hits on Sunday, Russo and Odom with the pinches, on Saturday. I thought Ozzie Pratt might have needed a mental health day halfway into the game on Saturday. And then he rattles off a 2-for-3 game with the grand slam on Sunday. So I hope that's a spark plug for his offensive production, but yeah, didn't see a whole lot of the, starting catcher and second base position offensively this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I've said a lot of this, but you know, you got to have some consistency from each position. But the good thing is, you know, we've gotten lucky to where when some people are just completely down and out, that other people are kind of playing above their normal and picking them up and scoring enough runs. So we've been able to hide behind that a little bit, but
yeah. And I don't think I'm breaking any news here, but I think that unless you're wanting to shuffle Monastir back to second where you played last year, or Eli Collins or something, I think that sounds like Nolan Tucker might be out for an extended period of time with a hamate injury. So it's tough for the depth of the infield, but need Seth to step up in that realm too. Next question. On the other side of the coin, how big of a shot in the arm was it to have our other bats come alive this series? I think we covered it in part of the first question too.
Yeah, I think, like I said, some of the other guys compensating for some guys that are lagging behind, you know, at opportune times has been good to see. So.
Yeah, that I'd point at that top of the seventh inning on Saturday when you're tied 3-3 in a pretty intense game. Both teams left a lot of runners on, and pulling away to score eight unanswered, that was huge. That's something you hadn't seen from this offense this year, to take a game and run with it late. And last question from Kyle from Midtown. He says, who is your favorite current athlete, any sport? If y'all don't have your answer, I will give mine. It is Ozzie Albies. He's like 5'6", strong as an ox, and still hits 30 bombs and swipes 20 bags a year, plays great defense, and is an awesome personality. Not many guys in the majors are producing that have smaller body frames than me, and I am a Braves fan, so that does make sense with that choice there. But I think Ozzie Albies is one of the hardest guys to root against in Major League Baseball.
Did he mean USM athlete or anybody?
Current athlete.
Okay, I don't know. I'm going to say Michael Thomas just because he's stirring things up on Twitter right now
for the Saints. He has some good ones. Fitz, Jeter retired if you're about to say him.
Oh, well, I didn't realize that. No, I would say I'd say if we're not restricting it to Southern Miss, I'm going to say Ellie De La Cruz. I'm a fairly new Cincinnati Reds fan, as I've been frequenting Cincinnati quite a bit and will be for the next 18 months. But he's exciting young player, you know, hopefully that and I haven't dug into it enough to know, but hopefully he gets paid what he needs to get paid and continues his new success. So
yeah, we're in an era where a lot of young guys are coming up to the majors with some special skill sets, and it's fun to watch. But always a fun one too, for sure. All right, we'll move over to the X. First question is from Mustard Buzzard Bleacher Creature. They say, if you could plot one corporate headquarters in Hattiesburg to complement the university's academic offerings, which one would you choose? Jeez.
I actually thought about this. I'm going to say Goodyear, because Goodyear does the tires, and that's polymer science. That relates to tires in some way, right? I'm not super smart, but I think Goodyear has some sort of program at the University of Akron, which has a really good polymer science program. So, and you know, polymer science is, you know, the signature program at USM. So I would say, and I don't want to offend YouTube business alums. Maybe you guys will take offense to that, but you know, generally that is the accepted opinion. And so I'm going to say Goodyear to improve our polymer science. So
you bringing in a global competitor right down the road from one of our proud alums. Tire business is an interesting choice, but I like the rationale. Selfishly, I can think of one particular company I wouldn't mind headquartering in Hattiesburg to save me some travel time. And they've hired something like over 150 Southern Miss alums over the last decade, but we don't have to go with that. But I saw that he had also mentioned academic programs, Jonathan, you were probably going to move on to this in a second, but I think any kind of expansion of or addition of professional programs would be huge. You know, it's no secret that us lacking some professional programs probably hinder a lot of our fundraising. You know, when schools are pumping out doctors and lawyers left and right, there's just more opportunity for scholarship benefactors and things like that. So that would be cool to see.
Yeah, I the first instinct my head went to was kind of a hyperbolic answer of the NFL, but we can narrow it down to maybe Riddle, or I never played tackle football, but whoever the biggest helmet producer for the NFL or football helmets is, my head went to the polymer science partnership there as well. But I guess, does anybody know who makes the helmets?
Oh, who is, like, what do they call it? Shutt or something?
You're thinking of Rydell.
Rydell, that's what I'm
thinking. I believe is headquartered in Illinois, if I'm not mistaken. I had an uncle that used to work for them for a few years. But I don't know who the major players are these days, but that would be cool, considering you know, I think we've done some work there in that space with the polymer science program, if I'm not mistaken. So that would be cool.
Yeah, I think Schilt or Schmidt or something is the other one.
Yes, that's what it's called.
I think it is.
Schilt, yeah. Oh, okay, like that's what SCH I – CH phonics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really good, question. Really good Lots podcasting of, here.
Yeah, I like the I like that question. Maybe some more of those thinking outside the box are good.
Next question is from David. He says, basketball question. Sorry, I clicked the wrong thing. He says, basketball question. Any update on the RGC renovations?
No, it's pretty quiet on that front. So hopefully something will happen this century.
Yeah. Just for everyone's knowledge listening out there, we don't have any kind of special line of communication with anybody in the athletic department, especially those that are making those kind of decisions. So as much as we would love to have some of that inside information and would just fawn over that, we're probably not going to have it.
We have some information on ULM's athletic department, though. So if you have any questions in that regard, feel free to
let us know. That's true. We have an in there. So anything you need to know about them, shoot it our way.
Yep. All right. Next is from Jace. He says, why do we see such high scoring college baseball games nowadays? I've got a theory on this. I think that a lot of pitching instruction and velocity emphasis on programming, I think that it teaches and emphasizes and publicizes kids throwing harder, not necessarily throwing strikes. And when you couple that with hitting advancement being a lot farther than it has been, and the BB core kind of evolution coming around to where numbers are back, I guess, comparable to where the BB core era was. I think the hitting is only getting more improved, and the pitching velo doesn't necessarily translate to better pitching. That makes sense.
Well, I think your best, and a lot of times your best, like, starting pitching prospects are not going to college.
Yeah, yeah. That's a factor too. Pat, anything out there?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it is equipment based. I think changing the ball, or whether they took the seams out off the balls back in 2015, and scoring has steadily gone up since then. I mean, I think, you know, a couple years ago, I think the average OPS in college baseball was like 800. Now I think it's crept up to 820. So I think the big part of it is the equipment. I mean, aluminum bats, I mean, are a big part of it. That's why you see a lot more scoring in college baseball versus pro baseball. So, but I do think, you know, I think they try to have the happy medium with taking the seams off the ball while still having the, I guess, the quote-unquote dead bats. But now, I mean, you're starting to see, like Brent said, those numbers, the offensive numbers kind of getting back. I mean, maybe not quite to the gorilla ball era, but at least to what it was, you know, the 2000s or so.
That's a funny Twitter name. Crocs with Socks says, given our Sunday woes, does the good Lord, in fact, love the Eagles? That's funny. I made a comment to my mom leaving the game Sunday that we must treat it as our day of rest because we're 1-3 on Sundays.
Yeah, I'm not touching this one, so.
Brick Johnson says, I've always had low expectations for this year. Is it fair to see this year as a rebuild year and take what we can get as far as success goes?
I think, you know, I think, I mean, really, I remember sending Jonathan a text like in 2022. Like, yeah, 2024 could be kind of light just because you felt like you were going to lose a lot after last year. And I think a reasonable expectation would be to make the field as an at-large or like our conference champion, but you would have gotten an at-large. So, you know, a top 35 type team. And I think, you know, hopefully get a good draw. I mean, obviously you always want to host, but if you can make the field comfortably and then let the chips fall where they may in June, I think that would be, you know, I would think that would be pretty acceptable in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you can definitely look at the lineup and see 6 out of 9 returners, 6 out of 9 departures and 2 All-Americans on the mound. And yeah, you can call it a rebuilding year for sure, just because this year turnover is high. But when you're talking about a program like Southern Miss and where we are with the 6 or 7 straight regionals and 2 straight supers, like a rebuilding year should still have the expectation of a regional attached to it. And I think that this team has that potential. But if we've seen, I guess, in Major League Baseball the last couple of years, how and regionals too, you see your Oral Roberts making Omaha. A lot of it is predicated on who's playing their best baseball in late May and early June. And you just got to hope that this team can kind of mature and be peaking at that time and go on a run. I mean, our only Omaha team was probably the last team in the field. So all you can ask, I think, is to get in that field of 64. And I do think I don't think it's frowned upon to expect to be in that field of 64. And I think Ostrander and his staff and every player will say that to you as well. And all you can ask is for a seat at the table and an opportunity to go on that run and see what happens.
Yep, I agree.
The ghost of Ellis Johnson has our next 3 questions. First one is, do y'all think we'll be seeing a lot more of Jacob Keys, or will we make a mistake burning his shirt? If it is still intact, he adds. I will say the shirt is not intact. I believe college baseball is a 1-game undergone rule with the exception of maybe an injury early on with a medical red shirt, right?
Yeah, I think one at bat or 1 pitch and you're gone. It's gone.
It's tough to predict the catching position on this team, I'll say. I think it may be the most unpredictable one on the team for what they do rotation-wise. But now that Keys' shirt is burned, you have to think of him as equal to the other two because you've burned his eligibility. So I guess we'll see how he's valued as far as arm, bat, defense, receiving abilities to the other two. But that's the new wrinkle that we have, and where the last 2 weeks we may have seen him as a shirt and now he's not. And I'll be curious to see how much playing time he gets.
Yeah, I don't see it as a huge mistake. I mean, I think you look at this new era of the portal and I think you kind of have to limit your red shirts really, because you know, if a guy transfers, and how did you benefit personally, or as a program, how did you benefit from that red shirt? I mean, not much. And I think you kind of looked at, you know, in previous years, USM really used that red shirt, those red shirts pretty aggressively, I mean, more than I think the vast majority of programs. And I think within this portal area or this portal era, I think you're going to see that less. Austin are using that less and, you know, losing some guys unexpectedly to the portal. I think, I think you're going to see those. I think that might have changed, just a guess, that changed his kind of view of using red shirts and how, you want to get guys out there. And if, you know, you burn a red shirt, then, you know, you have them maybe a year less, but then there's also the possibility they could transfer and then, you know, you didn't really benefit at all from that, you know, extra year of eligibility. So,
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you said it there.
I mean, we're at the point now that if you've got someone on your roster that is going to give you a better chance to win than maybe someone else, even though you're hoping for more development from them for a future season, that's kind of out the window these days, you know. So I don't see it as a mistake.
Yeah, I'm just kind of spitballing and thinking of the last redshirt contributors that we have, and they're all position players, and they've all been at least 4 years ago. Peyto took a shirt. Gabe Montenegro took a shirt. Matthew Guidry took a shirt. I think Bowen may have as well. And he
Slater.
No, I don't think Slade did.
Hunter Slater.
And this, we're all talking mid-2000s guys when all three of us were in school, right? And I think when you look at Ostrander's staff, he may use that 10 or 11 innings as your quasi redshirt, even though it doesn't save your eligibility. The few innings that Tyler Stewart threw, the few innings that Waldrop threw, the few innings that Nico threw all their true freshman years. I think it's seen less and less by him on the mound, which I don't disagree with at all. And I like, but I think it may be the portal, maybe just making it disappear for the position players as well, as considering Peyto was 4 years ago, the last time it seems like a redshirt guy contributed for this, currently contributing for us, right?
Yeah.
Next question.
Gillespie.
Fair.
He's, you know, hasn't been, you know, great so far, but he's, you know, somebody that certainly has played and, you know, hopefully, will improve as the year goes on. But, yeah, just wanted to add him in there.
No, good point. Second question. Do we see a Sunday shakeup with a pitching strategy and starter? I think we've beat this one like a dead horse this episode.
Yeah.
Last question from Ellis, our boy. He says, way two predictions on the 2025 weekend rotation. Ooh, this is a fun one.
I like Middleton.
Go first.
I like Middleton, English, Allen.
Subscribe.
I'll go Middleton, Allen, English. But I'll throw in the caveat that a true freshman starts the first midweek game, because I hear a lot about how much Oz loves this incoming freshman class.
Well, when one of the three that we mentioned is pitching for some SEC team next year, you're probably
no.
Right.
It's going to be a D3 school in the Northeast, Fitz.
Fair,
but yeah, that's a fun one. If anybody wants to submit their 25 rotations, feel free to let us know. And then our last one is from Chad. He says, who is starting tomorrow? Boswell. This is before the announcement.
Yeah.
Boswell has been announced, but I was going to predict Ozzie Pratt if it wasn't, because he's got a cannon. But, yeah, same thing as Fitz said earlier. We have no inside information of the coaching staff, nor would we try to pry for that. Kind of let that news come to us. But, yeah, Boswell's going to get the start tomorrow. I will say one thing about Boswell. I think that his breaking ball is definitely on against State, and that's how he got all of his outs, I think. But looked like he had trouble with his fastball command. And in order to get outs against this Alabama team, you're going to have to locate both pitches. So that's what I'll be looking for those first couple innings tomorrow night.
Is that it?
That's all I got.
Okay. Well, we will be back sometime next week, either Sunday or Monday. And we thank you guys for listening.